Box to Box Stoppage Time.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Hello and welcome to Box Stoppage Time. You're with Rob Gilbert, Michael Edgley and Derek Dyson for our podcast, where we go through our highlights of the past week, our teams and moments of the week, and much, much more. We've got a stack lined up. We flagged it in the main show earlier on in the week. But now, Derek, I need you to go with your game of the week because I'm coming off your game of the week with mine. So they sort of dovetail neatly into each other. So get us started, man.
Yeah, well, we spoke about England-Iceland in the main show, but I thought we might want to dig a little deeper. By the time this goes out, obviously, it will be nearly the start of the tournament. But, you know, Iceland have famously caused England problems, as you said in the main show, Rob, and we don't need much of an excuse to play this piece of epic commentary from 2016. Amazing stuff. We were sure that that bloke was okay and he recovered after what sounded like a severe medical episode he was going through, calling that game. That's, of course, the 2-1 win for Iceland over England in Euro 2016. Wasn't that drama this time around, as Iceland ruined the send-off party for England. It was a goal from Thorn Steenson. You know, the England players looked like training cones. I don't know if you saw the goal. They didn't move as Iceland displayed this pass through to him. And you have to say the Arsenal goalkeeper, Aaron Ramsdale, didn't cover himself with glory. It was an okay shot, but you'd expect a goalkeeper of his pedigree to save it. He let it kind of get under his body, under his hands. And England, despite having an absolute avalanche of possession, just couldn't break down the Iceland door. You know, it was pretty close to what Gareth Southgate would have been thinking for the starting 11 for Serbia, but it was a pretty insipid and display. Key players didn't turn up, so it does leave loads of questions. And as I said before, the talkback radio across the UK lit up after this. The tabloids are already getting stuck into Gareth Southgate, already getting stuck into the players, and the tournament hasn't even started yet. But I'm sure on Gareth's notepad on the bench, he would have been writing down, where will I play Jude Bellingham? He seems to have this problem. He has lots of players that can play number 10. He has lots of players, generally, lots of really good ones. And he just hasn't quite worked out where they're all gonna play. Another question that's interlinked to this, who will play with Declan Rice? Some people calling for Bellingham to play with Declan Rice, but I think that's too far back in the pitch. And you want Rice to be getting forward as well, not sitting back there. So I'd have him further up, but we'll see what Gareth says. We mentioned Stones hobbling off. If he can't start the first game, England are going to look absolute ragtag at the back, and Southgate will probably have to call up another player. And Kieran Trippier playing at left back. England have not left themselves with any options here. They've got a crook, Luke Shaw, at left, that could play at left back. He's been retained in the squad, and they've got a right-footed player playing left back. He has been given the number 3 jersey, so that might sort of indicate that is where he's going to play. And as I said in the main show, what are England going to do to unpick these teams like Serbia, like Slovenia? They're going to put on the low block and they're going to sit back and they're going to defend and they're going to let Foden and Saka, Cole Palmer have the ball and say, right, you break us down. You just got to hope from their point of view that this was just a bad day at the office and that they'll be better against Serbia, who will be a step up in opposition, that's for sure, Rob.
Yeah, it's just a result that diminishes not just the confidence of the country, but obviously the squad, no matter what you say, the squad itself, when they're beaten by a team which would expect to be competitive if they were actually there but are not even going to be at the tournament. And when you see blokes like Harry Maguire and James Maddison out of the squad, Southgate is on the precipice, really. He's on the precipice of greatness. We talk about that pantheon of England's greatest sporting heroes, or he could be an absolute memory in the dustbin of history if he doesn't get it right. So it's really going to be fascinating.
It's a long way back after that result.
Forget,
regardless of how, you know, what Martin Tyler thinks from last week's discussion, it's a long way back from that result.
Yeah, no, it is. And what I contrast this is, and I mentioned off the top of the show, why my game of the week dovetails with this, is that Germany wrapped up their preparations for Euro 2024. Now, it was unconvincing, even though they beat Greece 2-1 in Mönchengladbach.
Jolly's got the shot away. Neuer has spilled the ball, and Nasser scores. Gundogan on for Sané, looks for Havertz. Kai Havertz, deflected goal, and the Germans are level. Musiala, Pascal Gross! What a hit, and what a way to score! His first goal for the German national team. Now the party can start, a little late maybe, but on course now to sign off with a win before. It all starts for real 7 days from now.
So I guess listeners will imagine the reason why I contrast this is that Germany also were unconvincing. They also played a nation that is not going to the Euros, and it was also not the ideal build-up for the hosts against Scotland next Friday in Munich, but they managed to find a way to get out of jail. They could in that England game. I mean, Harry Kane, one of the opportunities he missed from about 2 feet out, where he skied it off his shin above the bar. He looked nonplussed and thinking, how the hell did I do that? But the Germans managed to get away. Kai Havertz had one in the back of the net. He was offside earlier in the game, but that Pascal Gross shot 89 minutes into the game was all they needed. And it's not about how you do it. It's about the result in these big tournaments. So I just feel that Julian Nagelsmann is getting these Germans just finely tuned. And after a few disappointing major tournaments in recent cycles across the Euros and the World Cups, that we might see a reprise of the Germans in 2006, where they didn't go all the way, but they really entertained us at home and then went on to win the next World Cup, Edge.
Yes, that's exactly correct. But I think the Euros are going to be absolutely fabulous watching. And I just hope that we get a team that we don't think is going to do well gets on a roll and captures the imagination of the football community. I think it's going to be a very, very good tournament.
Okay. And what about your game of the week, mate?
Well, I'm over in the Americas, and I thought I should bring some news from here. One of the great things about the English language is we have words borrowed from other languages, and one of my favorite English words is the word Schadenfreude, which obviously comes from the German language, Rob, and that's obviously reveling in the despair of another party. And I thought my game of the week, because I was in the USA earlier this week and witnessed this firsthand, the meltdown on all the talk shows in America, was that the USA in their Copa America warm-up game were defeated 5-1 by Colombia. Absolutely pounded they were. Matt Turner, the goalkeeper for America, Matt Turner, he kept falling over. He was punching the ground in frustration. The defensive setup with Anthony Robinson, and Johnny Cardozo and Tim Weir and Cameron Carter-Vickers. That's a good American football name, isn't it? Cameron Carter-Vickers. They were shambolic. They were just terrible. But it was, what do you do in America when you have a shocker? When the entire football community in America is looking to you to do something in Copa America, what do? You get on Twitter and or X these days, Rob, and the goalkeeper said, I'm going to apologise to the fans. That's not what we're about. And yeah, man, we need to bounce back in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
So he's bleeding his heart out on X like a lot of people do in America. But since they lost 5-1 to Czechoslovakia in the 1990 World Cup, the US hadn't given up that many goals. Only a 5-0 loss to Mexico at Azteca Stadium in the 2009 CONCACAF Cup. That's the River of Blood game the Mexicans just love to continually raise in discussions about the rivalry with America. So the last time they lost by 4 goals was the 2016 World Cup against Costa Rica, and that cost Jurgen Klinsmann his job. They sacked him after that, the US soccer guy. So schadenfreude for the Americans. We love to see the Americans not do well in football, don't we, Rob?
Yeah, well, there's something about the big dog that everybody likes to take down, regardless of whether it's the major sport Americans. Over there.
I shouldn't say, but what I've learned in Mexico
the USA.
We should say USA because the Americas is obviously encapsulating Canada and also all the way down to Latin America. And I learnt that we often say, we often call USA America, don't we? We need to call them the USA because America includes countries like Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a little fact, Rob.
No, look, you love your little facts and you love your little questions and especially all that sort of stuff.
Especially in stoppage time.
See, look at him doing it again. Right now, my team of the week was the Matildas, who we talked about in the main show, but I wanted to put the spotlight back on them off the back of the Trailblazers documentary on Stan. But in case you missed it, here are the highlights of that second game against China.
Oh, Li Mengwen's given it away. Heyman. It's a great run from Michelle Heyman, still going Michelle Heyman, oh, and she just couldn't finish it. Well, what a goal that would have been.
Well, it was a mesmerising run, wasn't it? And Michelle Heyman, at 35 years of age, she had 3 red shirts around her, shoulders off one, gets the shot away. It doesn't miss by much, but a delightful bit of individual skill with everything but the final pass to find the back of the net.
The left foot of Steph Catley with the captain's armband now. The right foot of Kyra Cooney-Cross, the two gunners. It is Catley who delivers. It's a great ball. It's a great header. And it's Claire Wheeler, the smallest player on the pitch, who heads home to give the Matildas the lead. It's given away cheaply by Shen Menglu. Oh, how about the pass from Vine in behind for Rasso, who accelerates and scores! Well, the hip's fine. It's a very good sign. Hayley Rasso doubles the lead. The assist from Courtney Vine, 10 minutes into the second half, and the Matildas are heading to Paris in style.
And we talked to Heather Reid about it earlier in the week. They shook off the rust of that Adelaide result. They were able to flex their muscles. And the reason that I wanted to, we don't typically leave a nearly goal in a package, but that Michelle Heyman run, if you haven't seen it, then mate, do yourself a favour and go back and watch it, because as good as Sam Kerr is, she doesn't possess that big physical intimidation that Michelle Heyman does. Now, I'm not saying Michelle Heyman is Sam Kerr, or, you know, some have said a like-for-like replacement, but that run where she had no less than 3 Chinese crowding around her, and she had the dexterous ability to not only keep the momentum of the run going, but to shift and move around them. And if we see Tony Gustafsson let her off the leash when we're counter-attacking in some of these important games, the Germans, the USA, and, of course, Zambia, they're going to be very worried about the counter-attacking capacity of Australia with Michelle Heyman marauding and the likes of Hayley Rasso, Steph Catley, et cetera, they're sitting there as support acts. So she only plays in the number 9 position. She was worried about whether she was going to get a spot in the squad edge. But I'm predicting that Michelle Heyman may well be the breakout star. And if Australia do get that medal, I'm going to suggest that Michelle Heyman will be the difference between Australia doing really well and not.
I think you're right, Rob. I mean, number 9, for us to do well, they have to have a good tournament and they have to score. She's got to finish off the good work from the team in the other parts of the field in the build-up. So, yeah, and she's in form. She's had a great 2 A-League women's seasons. There's no reason to think that she can't carry that form into the Olympic Games and do really well. I agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. And your team of the week, Uruguay?
Yeah, Uruguay. I'm obviously over in this part of the world. And obviously Uruguay, we all know the heritage of Uruguay. Only 4 million people in that small country in South America, but, you know, two World Cup champions. They always punch above their weight. They're ferocious the way they compete. And this time they've got Bielsa, the man that creates so much emotion with the fan group. So they took on the Mexicans, the Aztecas, at Mile High Stadium in Denver in their warm-up game. And the reason I'm raising this is because I've seen the backlash here in Mexico. Uruguay just absolutely slaughtered Mexico. They won 4-0. Darwin Núñez, Liverpool, your boy, he scored a hat-trick. And Manchester United's young winger, Facundo Pellistri, he scored the other goal. But they've, you know, they're just always dangerous. And Marcelo Bielsa, after the game, said to the Mexican press that you didn't take us seriously and you paid the price. So he doesn't mind giving the oppositions a bit of a smack. They'll be fascinating to watch in the Copa America, Uruguay. Who knows what's going to happen with them. But for me, they were the team of the week for me. But also, interestingly enough, Rob, is that Luis Suarez, the Inter Miami striker, he's been named in the squad. He's 37 years old, and he's scored 68 goals in 138 matches for Uruguay. And I imagine at some point he's going to partner with Núñez up front. And you add the Barcelona defender Araujo in there, Real Madrid's midfielder Valverde, you know, and Ugarte from PSG, and Bentancur from Tottenham Hotspur. So they're a super team.
Yeah,
Uruguay, my team of the week. Let's watch them in the Copa, see how they go.
Yeah, and who would have thought, I was just doing my homework when we were talking to Marcelo Mora y Araujo earlier in the week, that that they hold the record for the equal amount of titles with Argentina, 15 apiece, and Brazil back on 9. So, Uruguay have a very proud history of doing well in the Copa, and we'll expect to do so. Now, you've picked one of Edge's favourite nations in your team of the week, Derek. Give us the truncated version of why.
Yeah, well, we haven't spoken about Gibraltar for a while, and
the rock
is back. They are in need of a pump up, because they've got a famous result in the last week or so, and that is a 0-0 with Wales. Just a reminder that Gibraltar currently sit 202nd or 203rd in the world ranking, the population of 32,000. That is the same as Devonport in Tasmania. So imagine Devonport had a national team. That is what Gibraltar is. This snapped a 13-game losing streak for the Gibraltans. Aggregate total in those games was 50-0, including a 14-0 defeat to France. And it is heaps more pressure on the Wales manager, Rob Page. Wales won't be at the Euros. He did field quite a useful Wales side. 5 players earned their first cap in front of the 900 souls that went to watch this game in the Algarve. Page rolled the dice in the second half, and he brought on superstars like Brennan Johnson, Kiefer Moore, Daniel James, but they couldn't summon up that moment of quality to save their blushes. So a fantastic result for Gibraltar. And as I've needed to pad this section out a little bit, because there is nothing really to talk about in the game, we did mention in the intro a film reference, and I can't remember if we've done this one before, Rob, but where does Gibraltar famously feature in a film in a pre-title sequence scene?
Well, I'd suggest you're probably going to go with a Bond film because of their magnificent pre-scenes. And I don't know the answer to this one, so I feel like we're about to find out.
Yeah, well, it was The Living Daylights with Timothy Dalton. And just before the sequence there, they're infiltrating Gibraltar, so they jump out of the plane. I think some bad guys are trying to down them. possibly some kind of Union Jack parachute at the end. No doubt they crowbarred the monkeys at some point, at the apes I have seen on the top of the Rock of Gibraltar. But yeah, just a little Bond reference in there too. But anyway, back to Gibraltar. Well done. And Wales, how embarrassing.
Exactly. No, there was no 007 out there for Wales against the Gibraltans.
There's a new Bond movie coming, isn't there?
Was he Welsh, Timothy Dalton? Might have been, you know.
All right, I might do a bit of homework on that. While Edge is telling us about his hot topic now, we are hard up against the clock, gentlemen, so we're going to do world record raps on this, and if any one of our listeners want to find out more, they can maybe tune in to another episode where we'll expand on these stories. Edge, go ahead.
Well, we love the gossip from FIFA, but this is just gossip that's gone completely bonkers. I don't know if you realised, Eric and Rob and listeners, that FIFA's moving its entire legal department from Zurich to Miami.
Well, we did notice because you sent us all the link.
I know, but it is an unbelievable story. There's reports that 80 members of the 120-strong legal department based in Zurich will have left their posts by the time the move to the Republican stronghold of Miami is made. And among the departments moving over there is the Ethics Committee, which investigates serious allegations.
Do they have one?
They do, apparently. They obviously investigate serious allegations of misconduct, and the Audit, Compliance and Risk Management teams. It's understood that last week on LinkedIn, 50 positions were advertised, and they only gave their existing staff 1 month to decide whether they wanted to uproot their families and lives and move over to Miami. I mean, dear oh dear, this is incredible stuff. They're unquoted, so there's a few sources that have obviously been leaking stuff to the media about this whole shambles. One of them said there are several people with a lot of experience who are leaving. The system is already struggling to cope with so many cases, and this is going to cause a major disruption. In amongst all of those cases is a number of very significant sexual misconduct cases within the FIFA family. So, wow, yeah, this is big news. Imagine with all the stuff they've got going on at FIFA, and 150 people in the legal department, and 120, I should say, sorry, and 80 of them leave at the one time.
Yeah, now, to be fair, we joke about it, but some of the biggest cases brought against FIFA have come from America. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out in the future. Now, my hot topic, I'm just going to briefly touch on this because I do want to table it for deeper discussion in the coming months. I read an article by Owen Slot in The Times, How Football Silenced. For 25 years, the men who could have saved lives, two doctors, Don Williams and Eric Matzer, warned about the dangers of heading the ball decades ago. Had the FA acted then, 35 ex-players might not now be suing the sport they loved. It goes on. But one of the major points that Slot pointed out here is that one of the most recent cases, Dean Windass, added his name to the list. And he's a player from the more recent times who wasn't heading that big, heavy, wet, waterlogged ball that we recall from Jeff Astle, Nobby Styles, Joe Kinnear, of course, and so many others. Of course, Terry Hennessy, our good mate Dean Hennessy's dad as well, who's still with us. But dementia is a discussion point, Derek, that we'll continue to talk about.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely vital. And it's not just in football. It's coming to the surface in a whole range of sports now. So it's kind of an inconvenient truth for a lot of people out there. And I'm sure it will have its day, Rob.
Yeah, now heading now banned for players under 12. And I know we talked about gambling inevitably going the way of the dodo, but I'd suggest that at some point in our lifetimes that I know it might sound like sacrilege, but heading might not be a part of football. So, Derek, bring us home with your hot topic, man.
Yeah, I'll do this very quickly because it's obviously massive. I know Edge mentioned Schadenfreude somewhere in our recording, and I suppose this for me is a bit of Schadenfreude. It's Manchester City. What is going on at Manchester City? Pep is hinting that this could be his last year. Kevin De Bruyne is open to a move to Saudi Arabia. No one turned up to their victory parade, and now they've aimed both barrels at the Premier League. This is all amidst the 100-plus allegations that they face for allegedly breaking financial rules. City seems that they've had enough of being bullied. And all I can say is, ah, diddums. Yeah. The chairman, Al Mubarak, said he's frustrated that the club's on-pitch achievements are being accompanied by repeated reminders of these allegations, and City will now take them to court and where they will discuss the recent rule changes around sponsorship deals and whether they are fair. You know, the essence here is that the league is trying to stop clubs from benefiting from sponsorship deals from parties associated with the club ownership, e.g. Etihad Airways and City's ownership in Abu Dhabi. Newcastle were left frustrated when a similar deal with a Saudi airline was quashed by the same rules. City claimed they are victims of discrimination and that the other teams are ganging up on them to stifle their success on the pitch. They do have a bit of a point. It only takes 14 teams to change a rule in the Premier League, and if 14 of the teams decide that City shouldn't play in blue, then maybe that could get through. So they might have a point around the way that it's run, but I don't have a lot of sympathy for them, unfortunately.
But you know, these legal processes, Derek, involve a fair bit of shithousery. In other words, there's things that happen to really annoy your opponent. And the Premier League CEO, Richard Masters, and his former, the former Premier League CEO, Richard Scudamore, have been ordered to hand over every text message and every WhatsApp message since 2009 where they've mentioned Manchester City. Can you believe how long that's going to take them to sort that shit out? I mean, if that's not an abuse of the legal process, blimey. That is just shithousery, no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, nice full stop on the end of that story because, sympathy, not at all. Michael, you enjoy the rest of your time in Mexico City. You'll be back in Bangkok by this time next week.
Yes, I will. I'm back on Wednesday into Bangkok. So, yeah, absolutely. A great show, guys. Really enjoyed talking about everything early in the weekend and stoppage time. So, everyone have a great week's football. Enjoy the opening salvos of the Euros and the Copa, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, Derek, thank you.
Cheers, gents.
And to Adam Maloney, a brilliant job as always. Please subscribe to Box Stoppage Time and Offside, wherever you get your podcasts. Tweet us at BoxToBoxNTS and follow us on Twitter, and make sure you like us on Facebook as well. And join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in a world game.